Y'all ready? Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. Come on.
Tiger Rag Radio is on the air.
Let's crank this thing up.
We're statewide, breaking down the latest happenings with LSU athletics.
This is us.
Hear from the coaches.
You, what's required and asked of you to represent our university.
The players.
We're having fun and we're working, baby. That's it, baby.
The recruits.
Show some passion and some heart.
And those who cover the Fighting Tigers of LSU and the SEC.
We're all in to finish what we've started.
It's 2 hours of nonstop LSU talk.
What a privilege. I mean, you get to represent LSU.
Tiger Rag Radio is brought to you by Cummins. Cummins creates power solutions that the world depends on. Louisiana Beef Industry Council. Boudreaux's Electrical Services. Sunshine Quality Solutions. Super Chevy Dealers. And Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Get ready to talk Tigers with producer Andre Champagne and our hosts, Todd Horn, Jeff Palermo, and Glenn Gildo.
Three great players that are better people than they are players.
This is Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Good evening and welcome to Tiger Rag Radio. This is Glenn Gildo, editor of Tiger Rag Magazine, filling in for Jeff Palermo. Can't be with us tonight. Merry Christmas to Jeff. And I'm also joined by Tiger Rag executive editor Todd Horn, former Woodlawn quarterback, and and our producer, Andre Champagne.
Luke.
Andre Luke Champagne. Andre, how are you, buddy?
Doing well, guys. How are y'all?
Good, good. It's almost Christmas, man. I can feel it. But we got a great show for you tonight. We're going to start off with Mark Schlabaugh from ESPN. We're going to talk about the college football playoffs, the mess at Michigan, Lane Kiffin coming to LSU. And then we're going to talk to Corey Diaz about LSU women's basketball. We're going to talk to Mark at 6:30. We're going to talk to Corey about 6:45. At 7 p.m., you just heard his voice on the intro, LSU men's basketball coach Matt McMahon will join us live after their big win.
Huge.
Saturday against SMU in the Smoothie King Center. You called it, if not the best win in McMahon's time here at LSU. I think that win over Kentucky was a pretty big one, but definitely one of the best wins, Todd.
Yeah, I think this one could be the best win in retrospect, once all said and done, because like I said a couple of weeks ago, especially after they lost so badly to Texas Tech, quad one win heading into the SEC, where the SEC is down and there's not as many quad one opportunities this year. It's going to be a big win for LSU when it comes time to figuring out who goes to the tournament.
Yeah, and that was a very guard-strong team, SMU was, as was Texas Tech. So they obviously adjusted, which is a sign of a good coach. And they got three pretty light non-conference games coming up before they open SEC play in early January against Texas Tech. But we'll be talking to Matt at 7 o'clock, and then Glenn West, 6'10", Glenn West, will also talk about basketball with us. He was at the game. But we're going to go to Mark Schlabaugh from ESPN at 6:30. But first off, we're going to
Schlabaugh get out of the car or the van yet? Is he still?
That's right. He was with Marty. What's Marty's last name? Marty Smith. Marty Smith at ESPN when they interviewed Lane outside the airport there in Oxford. Schlabaugh was on the Lane watch. We'll talk to him about that. But this LSU Ole Miss dichotomy story is just. It's just not going to end, man. We just posted a story on Tiger Rag Magazine. You can go to it now about how LSU has a good chance of getting Ole Miss quarterback Trinidad Chambliss, who's just a great quarterback. He's got to get that waiver pass, though, and really on paper it doesn't look like he would, but the NCAA just lets everything go.
If his name was T.J. Finley, yeah, he'd be okay.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
I don't understand that either, but the NCAA loses more cases than Martin Berger, who used to go against Barry Mason.
So if I go to TigerRag.com, I can read about Chambliss. And
it's
also
up there.
Kiwan
and Kawan
Lacy.
Yeah. Chambliss, I mean, here it is a few days before their playoff game, and he's talking about how he's got to explore all his options.
And the college football is so different now. They really do need to work on that schedule, because that had to be uncomfortable for Chambliss and Lacey.
He didn't seem that uncomfortable. I mean, he was saying it pretty matter of fact.
Yeah, I know, but it still had to be uncomfortable, especially since it was a college football playoff press conference.
But it's reality. You know, it's reality.
I know.
And you know, I guess you could say, it's good that he's not lying. I'm an Ole Miss Rebel, you know. And you know, Lane didn't lie either. Like Nick left when he was at Miami, said he wasn't going to be the coach in Alabama.
24 hours later, he was getting up.
And he was, you know. So there's really no way to handle it, you know. And then Kawan Lacey got up, and he avoided the question a little bit. And he said he's just getting ready for the game, which was probably a good thing to say. But he could leave, too. I mean, all their offensive coaches – or at LSU, you know, the people they know.
Except for running backs coach Kevin Smith. He's still the wild card.
Right, and that's an interesting scenario. I just heard Matt Moscona talking about this on the way in, a frequent guest on Tiger Rag. Coach Smith could leave Ole Miss with Kawan Lacey as a package deal to wherever they go, and that could be LSU. He could rejoin all his fellow assistants and – you got to believe Chambliss. I mean, his first year in major college, and he has just a spectacular year. He's got to be kind of thanking Lane Kiffin for that. So I would be surprised if he doesn't come to LSU and they could get Kawan Lacey, too, and his running back coach. And then Frank Wilson could coach LSU in the bowl game and then end up at Ole Miss as running backs coach with one of LSU's running backs, probably going to go with them. And that's the world we're in now.
And if you had to speculate on which LSU running back would follow Frank Wilson to an Ole Miss, if that were to happen, you would have to think it would be Harlan Berry because of his longtime relationship with Frank Wilson.
Right.
So that would be a shame because Harlan Berry was, on the ascension, if you will, throughout the season and towards the end of the season.
Yeah, towards the end of the season after Frank took over as interim coach. But how weird is that? Frank would be coaching LSU on December 27th in the Texas Bowl, then going to Ole Miss. Charlie Weiss, the Ole Miss offensive coordinator, who is on work leave at Ole Miss because he's the LSU offensive coordinator, and several members of his staff, they be coaching Ole Miss in the playoffs and then coming back to LSU. And LSU has Ole Miss has these new coaches that there for next season. Their offensive coordinator and some other coaches, and they're not taking part in the preparation at all. You know, and like Lane Kiffin and his other coaches, they're not taking part in any of the preparation that LSU's practicing now.
Right.
for their bowl, there's been no media ops for LSU since Frank did a press conference. So it's really weird how things have happened.
It is weird. It's very strange. And again, it's uncomfortable. It's awkward.
Right.
And it's all attributable to the NCAA's schedule, which, as we know, and Nick Saban has talked about almost ad nauseum on game day when it was still coming on Saturday mornings. That they need to change that, and they do. They absolutely need to change the schedule, and hopefully that'll happen this offseason.
I don't know if there's a perfect schedule out there because there's so many other variables involved.
Right.
Unlike in the NFL, because you got the semester situation, you know. But one thing they could do, they don't need to have the early signing period in December. I think they should go back to that being in February. That'd make it easier for everybody.
You know, there's a couple things I definitely want to touch on and talk about, and I know we're going to run out of time here in this first segment relatively soon. But is this not the most subtle, if that's even the right word, conspicuous bowl game that LSU's ever played in? It's like nobody's talking about it. Nobody seems to care. A lot of apathy towards this game. What do you think about that?
Yeah, well, it's, there wouldn't be a lot of interest anyway, I don't think, because it is kind of a third-tier bowl. But I really think, and I wrote that in the story that's up now about Chambliss and Lacey, I think there's more LSU interest in this Ole Miss Tulane game than there is in the LSU-Houston game. I mean, people will watch that game when it comes around, But I mean, it just is so insignificant, and because so many of the players, you know, probably won't be back. A good portion of them will, though.
You're talking about LSU players.
Yeah, LSU players that play in the Texas Bowl. A lot of those guys will probably not be back at LSU, but who knows? But yeah, it's definitely strange the way the schedule is now.
Yeah, is Houston still favored over LSU?
They opened as a 5-point favorite. They're 9-3, and they're ranked 21 in the college football rankings.
Houston is now favored by 3.
Wow.
Okay. What's the over under?
It is at 41.5.
Thank you, Andre.
I don't see how in the world LSU is going to score 20 points.
I know, people, I'm not a degenerate. I just looked it up. So,
Luke.
Well,
Luke, you have a gambling problem?
No.
Okay.
You look at the yards Kawan Lacy put up, man. He 1,000-yard rusher. When's the last time LSU had a 1,000-yard rusher? Was it Tyron Davis Price?
Yeah.
Well, besides Jaden Daniels.
Right. Yeah, right. I mean, right. a running back 1,000-yard rusher.
Then it would have been.
What about Jaden Daniels getting put on the shelf? And what about Joe Burrow talking like he's he's got everybody concerned, and especially in Cincinnati.
Yeah, yeah. He just seems a little weary of the constant injuries and losing. Now, you know, he says
he's not having fun.
Yeah, yeah. And
he says if he's going to keep playing this game, he's got to have fun. But he says he played his worst game of his career, he said, against the Ravens this past weekend. They lost 24-0. It was the first time Joe Burrow's ever been shut out. And he said that in that post-game press conference from the Ravens game that his previous comments were not about the Bengals, but it sure sounded like it.
Yeah, yeah.
He actually got booed by Bengals fans this weekend. Wow. That's how bad he played.
Yeah, and Jamar Chase told the fans that were booing to run their ass home, quote unquote.
Well, it's been a rough year for a lot of LSU players in the NFL. Will Campbell has had an injury. Jaden Daniels, as you mentioned. Malik Nabers is out. But Jaden had such a fantastic year last year. Rookie of the year, got to the NFC title game. But it's going to be interesting to watch how those people bounce back. And you're working on a story about Joe Burrow for the next Tiger Rag magazine that'll be out in early January, and making a comparison to who?
To Burt Jones and also to Andrew Luck, because they both, Burt Jones made it to his 30th year. They had very comparable numbers when you break down the eras. You know, this is obviously with Burrow, he's got many more passing yards and many more touchdowns, but that's because of the game being different. But in terms of the flight or, you know, pattern of their careers, very similar, and of course Jones had a less than competent Baltimore Colts team that he was playing with most of his career, even though he led them to championships, at least playoffs, but then he got injured, and Burrow's been injured three major injuries since leading them to the Super Bowl in his second season, so there's very comparable stats and trajectories to their career.
And guys now think about their future life a lot more than back in the day, NFL players, you know. But we'll be back after a short break here at Tiger Rag. We're going to have at the bottom of the hour at 6:30, we're going to have Mark Schlabaugh from ESPN.com to talk playoffs and Lane Kiffin. And we'll be back with more Tiger Rag Radio right after this.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice,
making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. My brother and I grow rice, soybeans, and raise crawfish on our farm in Evangeline Parish. For a fourth-generation farmer like myself, Louisiana Farm Bureau is as much a part of my life as checking traps or harvesting rice. Our organization is more than 145,000 members strong, and we've been around for more than 100 years. The Louisiana Farm Bureau spans generations, and we want you to join our family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
And we're back with Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. This is Glenn Gilbo, live from the Super Chevy Dealers Studio with Tiger Rag Executive Editor Todd Horn and Tiger Rag Staff Reporter and versatile radio guy, Andre Champagne.
Just butchering it. Champagne, man.
Just call him Luke. That's what he is. That's who he is.
We're going to get you, man, what other name was it, Todd, that Glenn couldn't quite capture? It was on the LSU football team this year.
There's always one he can't capture.
Oh, Delane. It was Delane for the longest time.
Speaking of which, do you realize
Mansoor Delaney.
If Mansoor Delaney. Mansoor Delaney.
Mansoor Delaney.
Now, yeah, but, you know, there's two more All-American teams to come out. Yep. And if he gets it, he will be a unanimous All-American. And LSU's only had 13 other unanimous All-Americans in the history of their football program.
You're talking about the top four, right? Walter Camp at AP, he has. What are the other two?
There's the two more that need to come out are the Football Writers of America, and I forgot the other one.
Yeah.
But there's two more, and they'll come out in the next couple of days. And he's almost a cinch to get on both of those because he's made everyone else, including AP and Walter Camp that you were just talking about. But the point is that if he becomes a unanimous All-American, which he's more than likely going to be, consensus All-American. There's only been 13 other times in LSU football history that's happened, and Jaden Daniels didn't even become a consensus All-American.
So. And he did it with a painful core injury for most of the season.
Yeah,
that's really amazing. Especially for a cornerback who has to run and cut based on what the other guy's doing.
You know, and history will, you know, document this season as being one of the most disappointing seasons in LSU football history. But he will certainly be the highlight that is always pointed to for this team.
Yeah, and he did not win the Jim Thorpe Award Saturday. He was a finalist. That went to Caleb Downs from Ohio State. And you know, you often don't see a guy on a 7-5 team get those awards. And then, you know, most of the major awards LSU players have gotten have been when they've had better seasons, obviously, than 7-5. You know, it's always kind of a close race among those guys. But Mansoor is surely going to be a high first-round pick in the NFL draft. And it's going to be fun watching his career for sure. And we also got a little bit of news as far as the immediate future with linebacker Whit Weeks, who's not going to play in the bowl game as he's recovering.
Neither is Delane, by the way.
And neither is Delane. What did Whit say today, Todd?
Yeah, I don't know if it was today or yesterday, but he was on a podcast with Gordon McKernan, who's, you know, one of his NIL sugar daddies, if you want to call it that. But he said that he has not decided what he's going to do. He's got to make up his mind. He's got people telling him to leave. He's got people telling him to come back, and he's just going to block them all out and make his own decision. He said it does bode well for his decision-making process and for LSU that his future father-in-law, Lane Kiffin.
Maybe. They're just dating.
Yeah, okay, whatever. So that he kept Blake Baker. And he said that was really important, but he still hasn't made up his mind. And he gave no indication, at least I didn't hear any indication, of when he may make up his mind. The reason I think that's so important is, you know, you're losing Delane, you're losing A.J. Halsey, who I think was probably the best player on the defense all season, even though that, you know, smacks in the face of Delane. But those two were great. But you know,
different positions.
Yeah, I mean,
great players.
You need Whit Weeks back. You need Whit Weeks.
Yeah,
back.
And I don't think Whit would be probably a fourth round pick in the NFL draft. Well, I don't see him going that high. He needs to have a healthy full year, and come off of a better season, and he'll go higher.
I agree, and I don't know why it's such a difficult decision for him to make, given that fact. But
yeah.
Apparently, it is.
You know, sometimes
maybe he's just negotiating for a higher NIL.
Well, sometimes they get worried, you know, that they might drop. You know, and look at Garrett Nussmeier. I'm sure he wishes he'd have gone to the draft last year because he's probably looking at a third or fourth round pick. And I don't even know how healthy he is now. We're going to take another quick break, and we'll be back with ESPN.com's Mark Schlabaugh live here from the Super Chevy Dealers studio. Stay tuned for more Tiger Rag Radio.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. My brother and I grow rice, soybeans, and raise crawfish on our farm in Evangeline Parish. For a fourth-generation farmer like myself, Louisiana Farm Bureau is as much a part of my life as checking traps or harvesting rice. Our organization is more than 145,000 members strong, and we've been around for more than 100 years. The Louisiana Farm Bureau spans generations, and we want you to join our family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Let's go.
We now return to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Hello, welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. This is Glenn Gilbo, live from the Tiger Rag Radio Super Chevy Dealer Studio with Tiger Rag Executive Editor Todd Horn and our producer Andre Sempagne. And don't forget, you can listen to this entire show on a podcast shortly after the show ends at 8 p.m. That will be on YouTube or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and it'll be later tonight also on TigerRag.com. website. We're now joined by the great Mark Schlabaugh from ESPN, former Atlanta Journal-Constitution writer and author of several books, too many to mention, several New York Times bestsellers. Mark, how are you tonight, buddy?
Good, Glenn. How you doing?
Good. Good. Merry Christmas to you and your family. Thanks for joining us. What playoff game are you at this weekend if you're working, and what do you think of the playoffs in general going in to this opening weekend?
I will be back in Oxford
right.
Watching Ole Miss against Tulane. I assume you'll be there as well.
Actually, we were going to go, but us and other Louisiana media affiliates got turned down because of space, and I'm wondering if maybe because of the LSU interest in the game that may grate on the Rebels, but who knows. But and so I want you to keep an eye out for empty seats in the press box and send us a picture.
You and I were in Starkville together on
right
after Thanksgiving.
Right.
I drove from Thomasville, Georgia to Tuscaloosa in the middle of the night through Dothan and Columbus, Georgia and Dothan, Alabama, and got to Alabama and I stayed at Nick Saban's hotel, the Alamite. That was the first time I stayed there, which is a fine hotel. But
oh, he owns that? I did not know that.
Yeah, huh. He owns that. That's what Marty Smith told me, because I called Marty, and I said, Marty, I haven't eaten dinner, and the only thing on DoorDash was pizza. And like halfway through the call, I realized it was that Hunt Brothers stuff that they sell at gas stations. And so the guy delivering it, I said, hey, man, was it Chevron or Texaco? He said, I don't know, up there on Highway 82.
Oh, the gloried life of a sports writer.
53-year-old ESPN guy for 20 years. Yep.
well, Mark, tell us about your little adventure with Marty there in Starkville trying to – or then back in Oxford trying to find Lane.
And are you going to have the same van as your rental
car?
No,
Marty was driving a loaf of bread. I was driving my own F-150. I'm a smart man. There's only one way to get in and out of Oxford, and that's in your own automobile. I tried to fly into Memphis this week and there weren't many flights and there were no cars.
Jesus.
I called him Thanksgiving night and he said, you won't believe this. I'm driving like an 8-passenger van. And I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, there's no cars at the Birmingham airport. And apparently this is a nationwide problem. But I said, well, I'm eating gas station pizza. And then Saturday, we're like 36 hours into this thing, and he looks at me and goes, man, I ain't built for this. I don't know how y'all do this. And me and Pete Thamel are texting him. I'm like, dude, we ain't even halfway through this. We still got Sunday. And Pete's like, I do 20 of these a day, which he does. And so Marty earned his stripes, but he did a tremendous job in the memes and everything were fantastic. But nah, standing next to him at the airport, everybody recognizes Marty. Everybody loves Marty. Nobody knows me. And I love you, Marty. You're the best, Marty. I was like, oh my God, get me home.
And you and Marty both kind of cut your teeth as young reporters covering NASCAR, didn't you?
Yeah. Oh my God. That was the worst year of my life, Glenn. It was so bad. It was the year Jeff Gordon won the Daytona 500, cutting illegally, going on the apron to run somebody off the track, whatever they call it. So that was the year I got married and almost divorced.
Well, let's go to the game this weekend. You think Tulane's got a chance?
Probably not. But I mean, look, I love Summerall. I think it was a tremendous hire for Florida. I do not know him well. I've got other people at ESPN. My buddy Adam Rittenberg says he's the salt of the earth. He's a tremendous football coach. Most importantly, Glenn likes Widespread Panic, if you saw the video last week, which is a great Athens, Georgia band.
Right, right. Kirby Smart's a big Widespread Panic fan too, as I remember.
I think Pete Golding maybe.
Wow, because
he certainly looks like a Widespread Panic fan.
Because Kirby,
his hair and his you know, his beard and everything. But
yeah,
I mean Tulane had some key guys out the first time, so I don't think you can take too much into that. But hopefully, it's competitive. I just give Summerall all the credit in the world for seeing it through. And I do, look, Lane's taking a lot of flack for not finishing out. And, you know, Keith Carter and the Ole Miss administration made their decision that if you're going to one of our SEC rivals, you're not going to coach Ole Miss in the playoffs. This isn't going to be an infomercial for LSU football. And it's different going from Tulane to Florida. But the fact that he stayed and did it the right way and is going to coach these guys through it, I think says a lot about his character.
Do you think it's somewhat some type of hypocrisy with Ole Miss that they wouldn't let Lane coach, but they're letting the staff coach?
I mean, a little bit, but like somebody close to the situation, I was there for like 5 days when it all went down, told me it's not that we're not letting LSU's coach Ole Miss. It's we're not letting Lane coach Ole Miss. They felt like they couldn't trust him to be around those kids for another 3 or 4 weeks or however long it goes. But, I mean, I still think Kawan Lacy and Trinidad Chambliss and all those kids are probably ending up in Baton Rouge before it's all said and done.
Well, speaking of Chambliss, what's your take on his waiver situation? Do you think he's going to get that? What's the complicating factor?
It doesn't seem on paper like he has much of an argument to me.
They're cutting down on 6 years. I know that, the 6 years. I mean, at some point, these guys got to leave.
Yeah. You
know? I mean, I got a buddy here. I live in a tiny town in Georgia, and one of my best friend's sons is a high school quarterback, and he was All-State, and he was an All-State shortstop, and with a 4.5 GPA, and his uncle is one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play in the SEC, and he could not get an offer because nobody will leave college. That's what people don't realize. These guys are staying for 5-6 years. Who's the kid that was at – I think he was at Tulane, and then he
yeah.
went to Georgia State.
TJ Finley. Yeah,
he was at LSU.
He's like 17th year.
Yeah,
And Max – Max
at some
is
point,
too.
You got to leave.
Yeah, yeah. It's like you're
depriving high school kids who work their tails off of opportunities, and people don't understand that. I mean, there just aren't holes. There's just no opportunities.
Yeah, it's the 7 years of college John Belushi line from Animal House.
No, I mean, I did 7 in Athens at Georgia, but I wasn't playing.
Well, you were playing, but just not football.
But Glenn, you say Chambliss doesn't have a case, but he only played two games in his sophomore.
Yeah, but he wasn't injured. Do you get a year back because you weren't good enough to play? I mean, other kids have.
I mean, I guess back then it wasn't a 4-game rule. It was only if you played, you played. That coach at Ferris State in Michigan, his system is to play multiple quarterbacks every year.
Right.
He would never call me back, so I don't know what his system actually is. But, you know, he played like four guys one year. And I was like, what are you doing? Just making sure they can't transfer?
Exactly. Hey, I want getting back to Kiffin real quick. I wanted to ask you that there was an interesting line in his press release that he sent out before he got to LSU, where he said he offered to stay at Ole Miss with certain guardrails in place. What do you think those what he meant by the guardrails there? Like, I won't take any players, or what do you think he was going to offer up?
Glenn, I don't know, because I know Carter didn't tell me, Lane never told me. It was weird, because then I saw the Athletic story yesterday where they said the leadership council voted 9-3 that they wanted Lane to coach him in the playoffs, and that kind of contradicts what I was told, that they were kind of ready to move on, that it was too much about Lane and not enough about what the team had accomplished. So I don't know the answer to that. But, look, it was going to be messy regardless. You're going to take, Charlie, I would be stunned. I mean, Charlie Wise Jr. is going to be in LSU, but George McDonald, I guess the one guy that's kind of the linchpin is Kevin Smith, the running backs coach, because he's really tight with Lacey. But it's messy, and it's the SEC, and it's college football, and it's why we love it.
Hey, Mark, thanks a lot for joining us, buddy. Merry Christmas to you. Have a good game Saturday.
See you at the Sugar Bowl.
All right, bud. And we'll be back with more Tiger Rag Radio right after this.
Now more Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. This is Glenn Gilbo, Tiger Rag editor with Tiger Rag executive editor Todd Horn, and Tiger Rag producer, sports writer, overall versatile man, Andre Champagne.
Luke.
Better.
Luke. We're now joined by Corey Diaz, USA Today, Louisiana. Corey, how are you?
Gilbo, what's up, brother?
Happy holidays, man.
Hey, what am I, milk toast?
say hello to Todd, Andre. I mean,
hi, Corey. Todd.
and Andre. Hey, Corey, before we're gonna talk a little women's basketball, but I want to ask you another question first. I spoke to you about this briefly. We were down there in the chute after LSU lost to Texas A&M on October 25th, and you were talking to another writer, and you were saying, basically you were saying, this could be it for Brian Kelly and for Scott Woodward. And I'm like, well, man, okay, I know about the first part, but Woodward too. Wow, I didn't think of that. So, how are you already there at that point? And just great reporting on your part or connections. How had you already arrived at that possible conclusion, which did happen?
Yeah, well, I guess thanks for that, Glenn. But let me also say, I didn't think all of that would happen within like a 2-day span, like 48 hours, which I thought was just absolutely insane. But, you know, obviously some connections, just some talk and some insight that I had, some people that are obviously, connected in these sorts of circles and situations around LSU. But also too, like, at the time, the university was searching for its full-time president. So there was not only, going to be a leadership change at the top of the football program, but there was going to be change at basically the top of the university itself. And, that's why I sort of asked around and poked around. And, the consensus was, well, we're trying to find a new president. Folks I talked to said, we're not entirely sure if, the new leadership would feel comfortable with Scott Woodward making the decision on who the next LSU head football coach is. And so just from having heard that, it made sense because, you see it all the time. There's an athletic director, like a new AD gets hired at a school and they let go of the football coach that was there before them because they want to get their own guy. And I feel like, with this situation, now I didn't really know at the time that you know, LSU is going to sort of split up the, you know, president slash chancellor role. I didn't know that at the time. But, you know, obviously the president was still going to have some say-so in who, you know, eventually was going to get the job. And, you know, just a situation where, you know, from everything I heard and everything that I understood was that, you know, the new president would want to have a say in,
right,
you know, who the football coach is going to be, and then ultimately whether or not they were going to allow Woodward to stay on to do that. So,
well, it's an excellent point, Corey, because a lot of the national people went on to think that, oh, this was Jeff Landry, when the fact is Jeff Landry was just the first one to publicly talk about Woodward being in trouble. There were powerful people at LSU, I found out later, that did not like Woodward being did not want Woodward to make the next hire because he made two bad hires in a row based on contracts, even though the first one wasn't at LSU. There's so many people that have told me, oh, well, Jeff Landry got him fired. No, there's plenty of other people that wanted a change. And he was kind of tied to Brian Kelly. So that's what happened. But I appreciate that. And we're gonna switch gears now to a little.
Well, actually, before we switch gears yet.
We're going to downshift.
We're
going to
downshift. It's actually good if you think Lane Kiffin was a good hire for LSU football, which I think most people do, that Woodward did get axed, because there's no way that Scott Woodward.
Do you think? Really?
Yeah, and I don't think Kiffin would have come to LSU if Scott Woodward was the AD.
Well, Woodward definitely was not interested in Lane when he hired Brian Kelly. Lane had only been at Ole Miss 2 years.
Right.
But I was thinking that he might have been interested in him this time around.
I don't think Kiffin would have come.
Right.
If Woodward
Even if
was
he
still,
would have been. Yeah. Exactly. Wow.
But anyway.
Well, and if I may, guys.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Todd, to your point, the misalignment, right, between, I guess, what we viewed publicly, right, between Governor Jeff Landry and the head of the LSU athletic department at the time, that would have more than likely would have kept Lane Kiffin away. Now, I don't think that, you know, Woodward would have been doing his due diligence and good enough job if he at least didn't just call Lane, you know, once that job was open. I think he would have done that. I don't think, because look, Lane Kiffin was the top choice for any school that was looking for a head football coach. I mean,
I agree.
If they say they weren't, they were lying, right? So, like, Scott would have definitely called Lane, but I think Lane would have been very apprehensive on coming to LSU if basically the head of the state and the head of the athletic department were kind of at odds.
Yeah, and I believe what both Kiffin and Verge has told us, and Verge was the deciding factor, the relationship with Verge and his knowledge of football and the way to run a football operation, which is leap years ahead of what Woodward.
And stay out of the way.
Yeah,
too.
That's
the first thing Kiffin said when we asked him that. He said, I'll leave you alone. Verge said he's going to leave him alone. All right, hey, Corey, you're going to stay with us through the break, right?
Yep, I'm with you guys. Let's do it.
Okay, we'll be back with more Tiger Rag Radio right after this.
Tiger Rag Radio is back, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. This is Glenn Gilbo, Tiger Rag Editor. We're live from the Super Chevy Dealers Studio with Executive Editor Todd Horn and Producer Andre Champagna. And we're talking to Corey Diaz, covers LSU for USA Today Louisiana.
And don't forget, you can get our podcast of the show about 30 minutes after the show tonight on any podcast platform that you choose or YouTube.com. Corey, quick question for you. Actually, two questions. I'm going to wrap them together. One, I want you to explain the 6-7 thing to me because I just don't get it at all. I don't understand it. And there was an event in today's game where it became relevant, and I need you to explain it to me. And I also want to know why no one asked Kim Mulkey at the press conference if she's concerned about her offense because they haven't been able to score 100 points in their last two games. What's wrong with that offense?
Todd, you're unfortunately, man, I know I lived through it today, but you're still asking the wrong person on being able to explain it to you. I do not get it. I do not understand it. I know that probably makes me old, and you know what? I'm okay with that now. I don't know, man. It's just like, I don't know, something that kids have latched on to.
67.
And look, and
6'7", not
6'7".
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea what it is. But, look, you have to credit the ladies on the team, right, because they're all about entertainment and engagement, and that really got the kids engaged and involved in the game. So I definitely big hat tip to that, and I can appreciate that. You know, hey, can't score 100 against Morgan State. I mean, you know, do you fold the program? You know, do you shut the doors? Like, no. Look, I mean, it's you know, Morgan State, I thought, did a better job at what the Alcorn State head coach said that his game plan was when they came in last month to try to play. You know, they wanted to, you know, bleed the shot clock, run it all the way down. But Alcorn State just couldn't take care of the ball. Morgan State actually had some pretty good ball movement. They bled the shot clock all the way down basically to zero, I want to say 8 or 9 times today. There was 4 or 5 shot clock violations that LSU forced, and there was 4 other possessions at least where Morgan State took the shot clock literally all the way down to the last second. So if you do that, it's going to be really hard for, you know, an LSU or any other team, right, to score 100 points, because that just limits their possessions in the game. So the offense is fine. I thought this was probably one of the better defensive performances that I'd seen. And again, I know we're talking about Morgan State here, but, you know, I thought there was a lot of really good things defensively that LSU did today. And obviously they're 2 weeks away from, you know, opening up SEC play at home against Kentucky, which will be their first ranked matchup of the year. So, I think Kim feels really good about where they are. I think a lot of the ladies on the team, we spoke with Zakiya Johnson and Grace Knox after the game today, 2 freshmen. I asked them about, you know, with SEC play around the corner, you know, it's going to be a different animal, especially inside in terms of size and physicality. You know, how ready do they feel for that? And both of them answered with big smiles on their faces. They seem like they're ready to throw themselves into the deep end and see what it's going to be like. So, I think this team doesn't lack for confidence. There's a lot of skill and there's a lot of talent on this team. So I'm really excited for them to actually get into conference play so we can actually see what they look like.
Hey, what's up, Corey? This is Andre. Yeah, I just with SEC play coming up, I just want a real quick question just from watching this team 12 games in. What areas do you think this team could struggle in when it comes to early conference play because of that schedule maybe?
Yeah, you know, and that was part of the reason why, you know, I not only asked Zakiya and Grace after the game, you know, I asked Kim too. Look, you've got 4 post players who have never played in the SEC. They don't know what it's like. And I know Amaya Joyner's played at East Carolina. She's a senior. She's a grad transfer. But I'm sorry, but the American Athletic Conference is not like the SEC. It's just not. And Kate Cavall seen some of it in the ACC last year in her first year at Notre Dame, but she's only a sophomore. So it's going to be a different animal, you know, inside for them. And so I'm really curious to see what the post is going to look like for them, you know, as they're matching up with a Reagan Beers and with a Kyla Oldacre, you know, with Texas, you know, a lot of these, a Clara Strack, you know, right off the jump there at Kentucky.
Okay.
So it's going to be fun.
All right, Corey, thanks for joining us, buddy. We'll be back with more Tiger Ag Radio right after this.
Happy holidays.
You too, Corey.
Y'all ready? Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. Come on.
Tiger Rag Radio is on the air.
Let's crank this thing up.
We're statewide, breaking down the latest happenings with LSU athletics.
This is us.
Hear from the coaches.
What's required and asked of you to represent our university.
The players.
We're having fun and we're working, baby. That's it, man.
The recruits.
Show some passion and some heart.
And those who cover the Fighting Tigers of LSU and the SEC.
We're all in to finish what we've started.
It's 2 hours of nonstop LSU talk.
What a privilege. I mean, you get to represent LSU.
Tiger Rag Radio is brought to you by Cummins. Cummins creates power solutions that the world depends on. Louisiana Beef Industry Council. Boudreaux's Electrical Services. Sunshine Quality Solutions. Super Chevy Dealers. And Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Get ready to talk Tigers with producer Andre Champagne and our host, Todd Horn, Jeff Palermo, and Glenn Gilbo.
3 great players that are better people than they are players.
This is Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Hello, welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. This is Glenn Gilbo, Tiger Rag Editor with Todd Horn, Tiger Rag Executive Editor. and producer Andre Champagna. And we're now joined by LSU men's basketball coach Matt McMahon. Matt, how are you, bud?
I'm doing great. That title of executive sounds like a good title to have.
It's powerful, right? It's powerful. Speaking of powerful, Matt, you guys really exerted yourselves, and I'm sure it made you really proud the way you played against SMU, a quad one win against a team ranked in certainly in the top 40, and just an explosive offense filled with guards and quick play, and you beat them at their game. And what are your thoughts? How big was that game?
Well, it was huge. It was huge, Todd. I was thrilled to see the way our players performed. I think, you know, a little fatigued coming out of the 4 days and four games and 9 days away from home. We had our two worst halves of the year from an offensive standpoint. The second half at Boston College and then the first half at Texas Tech. So I was excited to see us get back to playing more to our identity, which is playing with great pace in the open floor. We scored 50 points in the paint, which has been a strength of ours. And, of course, I was thrilled to see Max McKinnon shoot the ball so well. Goes 8-9 from the floor, 6-7 from three, coming off a game where he really struggled in the first half at Texas Tech. So I thought it was a great win for us. I think SMU's got a really good team. Watched them beat Mississippi State. Watched them beat Texas A&M, Butler. As you said, really explosive offense. So while I was thrilled with our offensive performance coming back, I thought defensively, especially in the second half, really dialed in there and did enough to limit their firepower on the perimeter.
But, you know, I want to talk about Pablo Tamba some, because not only did he have a double-double and a really good game, but I understand he stepped in and you know, a position that you really didn't have him slated for whenever you first, you know, recruited him or brought him into the program. But he's like just had some an amazing stretch there. I mean, it was like back to back to back to back Tamba plays.
He saw his motor, Todd. He plays with great energy on both ends of the floor. Really versatile defender, can guard any position on the court. But where you saw him really flourish offensively was out in transition, running the floor, and then crashing the offensive glass. I think the play that got a lot of attention for him was the missed three where he came from the top of the key and dunked it with two hands in traffic. But the lob pass DJ Thomas to him from half court, and he caught it and reversed it with his left hand all in one motion on the other side of the rim was like the E in horse type shot. And I just thought he was fantastic out there.
That was the Tombahawk is what it's, I've heard it called.
I like that.
Yeah, Tombahawk.
I like that.
Hey, one more quick question for you, and then I'll Glenn's itching to ask you at least one or two. but the you know, you'd put a lot of emphasis on Michael Nwoko not getting into foul trouble, and then he only made it a minute and a half before you had to sit him down.
Right? Great coaching. Yeah.
I mean, is that concerning, or was that some undisciplined?
Well, it's concerning, but I think some of that had to do with the fact, you know, of the Turkish Tower. I can't pronounce his last name, but he's a really good player. He's 7'2" and 275 pounds listed. I would argue he's a little more than that, but he's really skilled, really good player, and really caused us some problems there early in the game. And it turned out going smaller with Pablo and Markel at the two forward spots ended up being a better matchup for us there in the first half because of their speed against the size and power of the big fella down there.
Listening
to answer your question, Todd, Mike does have to quit fouling. throw him off the team. Yeah.
We're talking to LSU basketball coach Matt McMahon here on Tiger Egg Radio from the Super Chevy Dealers Studio. Matt, you might not have heard it, but the Andy Enfield, the SMU coach, after the game, he was talking about Max McKinnon, and he said 8 of 9 from the field, six of seven from three-point range or six of eight from three-point range. He said that's hard to do like in pregame warm-ups when nobody's guarding. And, I mean, he was just on. Could you tell right off?
Well, he had a good week of practice. I think like multiple members of our program were disappointed in the way we played at Texas Tech. So I think he had a really good week in preparation. You know, he's now had the two games where I believe he was 6 of 8 from three against Omaha at home, and then 6 of 7 from three there on Sunday. He's up to 45% from the three-point line on the year. And, I think he's you underestimate how his size. He's a legit 6'6", and doesn't need much time or space to get that three off. He had had such a good stretch. You know, him and DJ Thomas were on the all-tournament team down in Destin. He played really well there, hit the big three in overtime and the win up at Boston College, and then just had the first half at Texas Tech where he didn't make shots. And so credit to him for how he responded and came back. He's a really smart player, really has great understanding of the game, and I was excited for him to see his hard work pay off with that outstanding performance.
And I wanted to ask you, Matt, with Jalen Reed out, who was taking up, who do you see taking up most of the minutes he was playing? Is that Pablo and Robert Miller III, or is there someone else?
Well, we got some more curveballs there with Rob and Mike's foul trouble in New Orleans on Saturday. But last week was important for us because really from the time Jalen suffered the unfortunate injury, we didn't have any practice time with the two games in Destin, the trip to Boston, and then over to Fort Worth. So we got to practice some different lineups last week during exams. In a perfect world, you'll see Mike and Woko's minutes continue to rise. As we previously discussed, has to stay out of foul trouble for that to happen. I think Rob Miller's versatility to play at the four and the five will allow his minutes to increase. And then probably the biggest change, though, Glenn, was really since June 1st, we've only worked with Markel Sutton at the three position. And, you know, he's played the four and the five his whole life. So, you know, last week we were able to spend some time moving him back to that forward position. And what a response he had, 23 points and 12 rebounds. So I think we're well equipped. Obviously, I'm absolutely devastated and heartbroken about the situation with Jalen, but I do like our personnel being equipped with the versatility to figure some things out and still have a chance to win games.
The Tigers are back in action Friday night. Finally get back home, Southeastern, 7 p.m. Friday. Then you got Prairie View, 6 p.m. Monday. Southern Miss on Monday, December 29th. Before the SEC opener at Texas A&M Saturday, January 3rd, 3 p.m. ESPNU. Matt, is it a bit of a relief that the SEC is not the great – I mean, it's still really good, but it's not just setting the world on fire like it was at this time last year. Is that – how do you view that?
No, I mean, I think there's opportunity there. I mean, it's still by far, if you look at the computer rankings, the number one league in the country. So to say it's down or has fallen back, I think is incorrect. But last year was, I mean, that's a historic season. It's the greatest conference season in the history of college basketball by a wide margin. So I still think the league is really good. I still think you'll see a ton of teams make the NCAA tournament. And, our job here is to finish up this week strong. Hopefully build on some of the momentum of the performance on Saturday down in New Orleans, which was a great event for us. It was great to be back in the home state after a few weeks away and see what we can get accomplished here heading into Christmas break. And then we'll worry about the SEC after that.
Well, Matt, when you talk about the SEC being down relative to last year.
He didn't say down.
Well, no.
relative. Well, I mean, there's only one way to go relative to last year.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, that was ridiculous.
But how does that impact, you know, I mean, you're like, I think, 31 in the net right now or 32,
yeah.
Which is good. at this time of year, but it's going to affect your quad one opportunities in the SEC this year. Is that going to be a negative impact on your chance of making the NCAA tournament by the time we get to the end of the year?
No, absolutely not. I mean, the SEC is still by far the number one conference in the country, and there'll still be tons of quad one opportunities when you get into league play. And so, you know, I was actually studying that yesterday. You know, there are 8 teams ahead of us in the net right now that don't have a quad one win at all yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 32% of the top 50 teams in the net don't have any quad one wins yet. And so there'll be plenty of opportunities when you get to SEC play to improve your computer rankings. Now, obviously, you got to win to do that. But I think, you know, being in the strongest league in the country only, certainly relative to last year, it's still the number one league in the country. So those opportunities are still there.
With DJ at point, you know, he's obviously had he had a great game. I think 12 points and 12 assists against SMU, and that was a career high in assists. But he struggled in the second half against Boston College. He's not in the overtime, but in the second half at least, and he struggled against Texas Tech. Is there any problem there or concern, or have you corrected that with him?
No, I don't think he struggled. I mean, he at Boston College, he's 8 of 21 from the floor. I know he'd like to shoot a higher percentage, but, you know, went on the 8-0 run to end the second half to get us to overtime and then scored the first 4 in the second. And then at Texas Tech, you know, just did not shoot it well. You know, I think you'll continue to see him score the ball well for us, but, you know, he was only credited with 1 assist in that game. He actually had 4 by the grade, but he created 15 assist opportunities in the game. We just didn't make any shots.
Mm-hmm.
So no concerns at all on my end. I look forward to watching him play on Friday night. He lets you sleep well at night when you have a guy like that running the team.
Yeah, he's a coach on the floor, man. His assists are really amazing. You can tell he's looking for his targets before he's even at half court, man.
Well said.
All right, Matt, thanks a lot for joining us. Try to get in your Christmas shopping and have a good rest of the month here, 3 games. Good luck to you. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. I look forward to seeing you on Friday night, 7 o'clock at the PMAC.
All right, we'll be there.
Thanks, Matt.
Tune into this Tiger Rag radio on the podcast tonight on your favorite podcasts, your favorite place to catch a podcast, YouTube, and TigerRag.com. We'll be back with more Tiger Rag radio and talking to Glenn West about LSU basketball right after this.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. For more than 100 years, Louisiana Farm Bureau has been the voice of Louisiana agriculture. Louisiana Farm Bureau advocates on behalf of all the farmers and ranchers across our great state. What that really means is we advocate for you to ensure we have the safest, most abundant, and affordable food supply in the world. Louisiana Farm Bureau is 145,000 members strong, and we want you to join the Louisiana Farm Bureau family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Tiger Rag Radio is back on the air, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. This is Glenn Gilbo, Tiger Rag editor, with executive editor Todd Horn and producer Andre Champagne Oso.
Oso.
And we are live from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio. If you want to catch that Matt McMahon interview we just had, that was cool. That will be on a podcast on YouTube shortly after the show, or you can get it anywhere where you catch your podcast. It'll also be on the TigerRag.com website later tonight. But that was an impressive win by the Tigers, especially when they just lost bad to a team that has really good guards, and then they beat a team with really good guards, and really SMU was never really in the game for much at all.
LSU dominated pretty much the whole game. I mean, they built a 15-point lead in the first half and extended it again in the second half after a brief rally in late in the second half by SMU. That was really the only time they showed that they could contend with LSU. Other than that, it was, like you said, it was pretty much dominant.
Yeah, and, you know, still, we're not in the SEC yet, but I'm impressed with how they've recovered from not having Jalen Reed off the bench, because they're still playing pretty well inside with Pablo, with no Mike Nwoko when he's not in foul trouble, and Markel Sutton, you know, came here to kind of play three, and he's been playing four and five, you know, and and Max McKinnon is, I mean, really he's a guard, but he's a tall guard, and he can get in there and get his rebounds too. So it looks like they're going to be okay inside, and I just love the point guard. So they're really a lot better than they were last year.
Yeah, they're more physical. They're built more for the SEC, like we've talked about, and they're showing that. They also have more depth, as illustrated by Reed going down and not impacting them nearly as much. And I think the most important thing, I mean, all those factors are very important, but I think they have a really solid chance of making the NCAA tournament this year, primarily because they're playing together. And this is a brand new team. I mean, they only had Jalen Reed and
Robert Miller III.
Robert Miller III were the only two that were back from last year's roster. And this team looks like they've been
down to one. Yeah.
Yeah, they look like they've been together for years. That's amazing to me. And I think that's why Southeastern and the other two games they have before they start SEC, they need that a little bit more time together to continue to develop that chemistry and stay focused on the things that I'm sure Matt wants them to improve upon. But I think that they're going to make the NCAA tournament this year. I really do.
Well, if they can just hover around 500 all year, you know, never get like three or four games under 500, and you're around 9 or 10 wins, I think they'll get in.
Yeah, well, so look, they're going to go in probably, 12-1.
They're 9-1 right now.
Yeah, so they'll be 12-1.
Going into A&M.
Going into, if they can get, I think Southern Miss is the biggest hurdle they have. That would be the last game that Southern Miss has played fairly decent basketball this year. But let's say they're 12-1, 18-game SEC schedule, they win 9, then they'll be 21-10.
Yeah.
That'll probably get them in.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And they have, you know, they have a quality quad one win, and they've only had two chances for quad one wins. And if they win 9 games in the SEC, you know, probably 4 of those will be quad one, you know, so they should be there. But
that'll move up and down during the course of the year. Teams will go into quad one and drop out of quad one. But I think overall, I think that would be good enough to get them in. They're going to head into the season with a high net ranking relative to what they had last year.
Yeah, you said they're like 32. I think the highest they ever got last year was in the 50s.
Yeah.
And I don't even think they were there long.
Yeah.
At all.
But what, you know, switching gears while we got time, I know Glenn's going to come on, Glenn West with 247 Sports, and we're going to talk to him more about basketball and football. But your buddy Paul Feinbaum today, I think it was today, made a comment that when I think the subject was why Brian Kelly hasn't been in high demand for a job right now. This is the same guy that had Brian Kelly on his show
every Monday.
Every Monday.
And was kind of nice to him.
Really nice to him. Really nice to him for the last couple of years, right?
Yeah. They must have had some kind of arrangement.
He didn't even explain this comment. He just said Brian Kelly's arrogant.
He said that?
Yep. And with no explanation as to what he was referring to.
Wow. Well,
but you got, you know, we talked about it earlier. He's got a potential chance to be the Michigan coach.
I don't know. I haven't heard his name at all, other than my column.
I have heard his name.
But I mean, he was up on some lists, but you know, and there'll be a job. You know, the trickle down effect. He might get one, and if not this year, I would think he'll get one next year. But he's not somebody they're going after. Anybody's really aggressive
because he's arrogant.
There's a lot of coaches who are arrogant who get jobs.
I thought that was a very uncharacteristic statement.
Yeah, it was. He's not a hot commodity right now. He's not. But I will be surprised if he doesn't get a head coaching job if he wants it at some point. If not this year, next year. We'll be back. This time we will be back with Glenn West at the bottom of the hour at 7:30 here on Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. For more than 100 years, Louisiana Farm Bureau has been the voice of Louisiana agriculture. Louisiana Farm Bureau advocates on behalf of all the farmers and ranchers across our great state. What that really means is we advocate for you to ensure we have the safest, most abundant, and affordable food supply in the world. Louisiana Farm Bureau is 145,000 members strong, and we want you to join the Louisiana Farm Bureau family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio, we're back to Tiger Rag Radio.
Welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. We're coming down the home stretch. This is Glenn Gilbo, Tiger Rag editor, with Tiger Rag executive editor Todd Horn and producer Andre Champagne. We're now joined by Glenn West of Go247. Glenn, how are you tonight, buddy?
Doing all right, guys. Fighting a little bit of a head cold, but I think it's the elements here. Hot, cold, hot, cold. That just seems to be the trend we're on right now with the weather. So
it is.
We're doing all right.
So it's supposed to actually be warm the rest of the week. So maybe it'll get a little more stabilized for you there, Glenn. But
I hope so.
we want to talk about basketball. Obviously, we just got off with Matt, and that was a huge, huge quad one win over SMU this weekend in New Orleans. It was very important for LSU to get that, especially coming off of what happened against Texas Tech. But they had four players combining for 75 points. What was your biggest takeaway from the win over SMU and how the transfers have meshed so far this season?
Yeah, I think for me, probably the biggest thing that stood out was just the blueprint of them winning in the SEC is exactly how they have to play from that game against SMU. They did a really nice job in a lot of different areas. And I think for me, the one thing that stands out, of course, if anytime you shoot 60% from the floor and 45% from three, you have a pretty good chance at winning, but it's how they got those shots and how they got those points that makes this really a transferable brand of basketball. And it really starts with having shooting wings, to be quite honest with you. They finally had some luck behind the three-point arc with Max McKinnon knocking down six threes. And SMU had to respect that. They had to respect LSU as a perimeter team because of the way that they were shooting the ball from the outside. And, you know, this is going to be very much an inside-out offense. And the only way to open up things in the paint and at the free throw line for this team is being able to prove that you can hit outside shots. And right. So they're going to need other players besides just McKinnon to step up. But that was a real nice step forward for them to do that against an opponent like SMU that's got NCAA tournament aspirations, just as LSU does. And so it was a great win. It was a really controlled game, I think, from start to finish. You know, LSU really felt like the team that was, throwing all the punches and making a lot of and landing a lot of the haymakers. And so it's definitely something that they can look back on come January when the competition heats up again.
And so, Glenn, you know, this team is different than Matt's previous three teams. I mean, you know, they always had a decent record or a good record heading into the SEC play, and then it was like, you know, except for 2 years ago, they weren't really competitive in the SEC. But this team's built differently, and like you said, you know, the playing from inside out and having to hit the outside shot and having multiple people that can do that. This team is different, and this team can actually do well in the SEC. I'm not saying they're going to win the SEC, or you know, they may not even have a winning record in the SEC, but I think they can win enough to make the NCAA tournament. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that they can be much more competitive, and I think honestly it starts with having a point guard like Dedon Thomas. They just have not had that in previous years under Coach McMahon, and having just this floor general who's able to just set people up, get to his own spots, and really be able to read defenses the right way and get his teammates good open looks, I think has been a real game changer for LSU. You know, he had 12 assists and just two turnovers in that game against SMU. I can't remember the last time an LSU point guard had 12 assists in a game before Dedon did this last weekend. But having that kind of point guard that can really just lead everything offensively, I think you've seen just the benefits of having that kind of a point guard. And then just, you know, I think that they were more aggressive in the portal. And you mentioned the transfers earlier. They spent good money on guys like Michael Nwoko and Markel Sutton and certainly Max McKinnon. They're going to need some more of those guys to step up for sure, I think, in SEC play. You're going to have to stay out of foul trouble in the front court, because that is maybe my one concern now, is that LSU is a little bit thinner in the front court positions with the loss of Jalen Reed. So they've got to find different ways when guys get in foul trouble or aren't playing well. They're going to have to find ways for that front court to still be effective with Sutton. And you saw that on Saturday, I thought, when they played Sutton a little bit more at the five, when Nwoko and Robert Miller got into some foul trouble. And I think that's something that they can practice and explore a little bit more if in an emergency situation going forward.
And you, Glenn, you talked about Dedon, and you talked about how good of a pure point guard he is. Two things. One, do you think he is really one of the best point guards in the conference and the country? And two,
I think
All right, go ahead. You can answer that.
I think he's one of the most underrated point guards in the conference and probably the country too. I just think what he does from a playmaking perspective is unlike anything they've had at LSU in a while. And you know, he's going to need those guys around him though to make shots and to make plays. And so I think having that playmaker and having that floor general is the first part of it. Now you want to see some consistency with the other guys and being able to make those shots and convert on those opportunities going forward.
Does it bother you or concern you that they don't have anybody that's really getting any time backing him up? Jalen Reese, of course, is the freshman point guard, and he looks like a more mature player than a freshman, but he doesn't have the experience. Is that a concern?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, like, I think that Dedon's probably going to have to play, you know, 35 minutes for you a game in SEC play. And that's going to be a tall task, but one that I think LSU is going to have to really lean into. You know, one of the lineups that they trotted out there actually had Dedon and Jalen Reese on the floor at the same time. I think they're just looking for any kind of combinations where they can have multiple playmakers out on the floor at the same time. I think McKinnon can give you that to a certain extent. Hopefully, you know, Markel Sutton can continue to develop as a playmaker as well. They have some guys that are capable of doing it, but it can't all be Dedon. Like, they're going to have other guys make plays, you know, get their own shots when they need to, when possessions are maybe breaking down. Like, that, all that stuff is really important in SEC play, because these defenses in the SEC are not going to just give you freebies. They're going to make you earn every point that you get.
Yeah, the only thing I think Dedon probably needs, the only weak spot I see right now, is he's only 7 of 29 from three-point range. That's 24%. Yeah. I'm sure he can shoot better than that. But I just wanted to hear what you say about this, Glenn. To me, this is a real versatile team. Look at Markel Sutton. He's averaging, 14, almost 14 points a game, 9 rebounds, and he's a good three-point shooter too. I mean, you usually don't see a rebounder like that. He's hitting 30% from three-point range. McKinnon can also rebound a little bit. Pablo can rebound. You know, sometimes he scores. He's averaging about 6. But do you think, like, if Dedon just has a bad game, where do you think they are there?
Yeah, I think that they probably are a little bit in trouble if Dedon has a bad game. Like, I think that he's so much the center of what they're trying to do on the offensive side of the floor that everything kind of goes through him. But, you know, Sutton is a guy that I think can really hit the outside shot. He's, like you mentioned, a very versatile wing and somebody that I think LSU really is going to need to hit at a more consistent rate here in SEC play as an outside scorer.
Okay, Glenn, you're going to stay with us through the break, right?
Yep.
Okay, we'll be back with more Tiger Rag Radio right after this.
Now, back to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio with Glenn Gilbo, editor of Tiger Rag here, Todd Horn, executive editor, and Andre Champagne our producer. We are rejoined by Glenn West from Go247 Sports. Glenn, you had a great piece on Whit Weeks. What's your gut feeling? Do you think he's going to end up coming back to the Tigers?
I do. I really think that there are a lot more positives than negatives of Weeks coming back. I think the biggest negative is, you know, the re-injury risk after a year full of injuries for him. But I just think there's so much that aligns with him, and certainly retaining Blake Baker, I think, is a huge piece to that. I think that he's shown that he can be a huge leader for this team when he's on the field, somebody that I think can have a really big bounce back senior kind of year, can go out as one of the greats if he has the kind of season that LSU is going to be striving for in year one under Lane Kiffin. I think that there's a lot that makes sense in him coming back, and he'll also be compensated well. Like I think that he'll get an NIL deal that's worthy of a day three kind of pick in the NFL draft, and that's kind of where I see him right now. I don't know that he gets into the top three rounds of the NFL draft, and if your NIL compensation to come back to LSU for another year, run it back for another championship, get to play with your younger brother for a second year, I think there's a lot there that could be appealing for Whit to come back. So I do think he's back.
Do you think he's the most important element for that defense to come back?
I think to come back, yes. I think he's, of the guys that are kind of maybe on the fence, then yes. But in terms of just the most important element, I love what this secondary has the potential to turn into next year. Like DJ Pickett, PJ Woodland, that can be your starting cornerbacks, no questions asked. I think safety, if you're able to get Tamarcus Cooley back, you get Deshaun Spears in year three. You have some really exciting young prospects, I think, that are developing at those two positions as well. I think that I wrote about this today as well. I do think that kind of your best position group on the entire roster for the future and what it looks like is in that secondary. I'm really impressed with those guys and think that they have a chance to be really, really good next year.
Speaking of the defensive backs, has there been a decision reached, or what are you hearing about Corey Raymond definitely coming back?
I think he's back. Like I think that they've done a nice job of retaining the defensive staff. The only guy that I don't think will be back is Kyle Williams, the defensive line coach. And that's a position that is still open at this point. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if Lane ends up promoting his brother, Chris Kiffin, to that role. Chris has a lot of experience coaching the defensive line at both the NFL and the college level. It makes a lot of sense if they're not able to go out there and get the home run, hire a guy at the defensive line spot. But I do think that Corey will be back. He was definitely a priority, especially after they were able to retain Blake Baker. Those pieces really kind of fit, kind of came into line after Blake Baker made his decision last week.
Switching sides of the ball. I mean, obviously the talk about quarterback with Chambliss, possibly getting his waiver so he can have an additional year and then transferring to LSU. We've talked about it, that Glenn just wrote an article about it. Everybody's talking about it, but it's still up in the air. Of course, DJ Lagaway, Florida's quarterback, who's probably the most talented quarterback with career upside, talking to NFL, who just said he's going to enter the portal.
TJ Finley.
TJ
coming
Finley,
back to LSU. What do you think?
There you go.
What is he, 35?
Charm, right?
Is he 35?
Charm.
But
yeah.
I mean, I know we talked a little bit about it last week, but who do you think they really need to get, and how many quarterbacks do they need to get in the transfer portal? And is there any quarterback available to sign in February that we don't know about? Because I don't know about any.
Yeah, I think there's a couple guys that really make sense to me. I think Chambliss is one. I wrote about him today as well. If he gets that waiver, it really just makes all the sense in the world when all of his coaches are going to be at LSU next year. He knows the system really well. I think that makes a ton of sense if he's able to get that extra waiver year. If he doesn't and he has to go to the NFL, I think for me, Sam Leavitt at Arizona State is the one to really keep an eye on. I think he's an ideal fit for what Lane Kiffin likes to do with his quarterbacks. He can really run the football. I think he has 10 touchdowns over his last couple of years running the ball. He was on He had a great year, obviously, last year, leading Arizona State to the college football playoff. Had it hampered a little bit this year with that injury, and it's going to be an injury that probably takes him through at least a decent portion of the offseason as well. So that's maybe the one caveat of bringing in a guy like that. But he does everything that I think Lane Kiffin wants his quarterbacks to do. And so I think Sam Leavitt, if he goes in the portal, which all indications are that he will, I would expect LSU to be calling pretty soon after that portal, after he enters the portal on January 2nd.
I'm wondering if the NCAA compliance people at Ole Miss are telling their NCAA contacts in Indianapolis, look, you know what, we don't think Trinidad has a good case after all. And then the LSU compliance people are up there. Hey, come on. We got to get this guy a year.
Yeah, look, I've listened to a couple of his press conferences. He sounds like a really great human being. I hope he gets it because, you know, he spent so much of his time in his college career at, you know, the Division II level, very much overlooked. I would love to see him get it and love to see him in Baton Rouge, but we'll see. I think it's still very much up in the air of whether or not he gets that.
Do you think Van Buren stays?
I do. I think just gut feeling right now, Van Buren stays, and if not, it's going to be real hard to get three quarterbacks in here. Like I think if Van Buren stays and you add two, that's okay to get you through this year.
September 19th, baby, LSU at Ole Miss. It's going to be a bloodbath.
Oh, can't wait. Can't wait.
All right, Glenn.
I'll be disguised in my Ole Miss red that weekend. I don't need any Ole Miss fans coming up to me on the walk over to the stadium.
I think I'll be able to pick you out, man.
Yeah, I know. That's exactly.
All right, Glenn, thanks for joining us.
All right. Thanks, guys.
We'll be back. Wrap up the show. A couple of more segments right after this on Tiger Rag Radio.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with five available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice,
making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
How you doing? This is Snoop Dogg.
Tiger Rag. Tiger Rag Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, you are tuned in.
Talk LSU sports, interviews, opinions, and your calls around the Tiger Nation.
Baton Rouge was a life for me. Home with LSU Tigers.
Now more Tiger Rag Radio.
Man, we love to score and get highlights and championships and play to win.
Tiger Rag Radio.
Welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. Final segment. Glenn Gilbo, Tiger Rag editor here with Todd Horn, executive editor, and Andre Champagna, producer. I want to thank our guest tonight. We had Mark Slabaugh from ESPN.com, former Atlanta Journal-Constitution writer. And, you know, that's always been, well, it was a great paper back in the day. The AJC has its last printed version on December 31st, New Year's Eve of this year. Sad day. It was a great paper at one time. Corey Diaz from the USA Today, Louisiana, was with us as well. He brought up some great points about the Scott Woodward exit from LSU after Brian Kelly. And, of course, men's basketball coach Matt McMahon on top of the world right now, still going into the SEC. Matt was great with us. And then Glenn West continuing on about basketball and football. And LSU's roster is not in good shape right now.
No, and you can thank Austin Thomas for that. No, I'm just kidding. Austin Thomas, by the way, who was the general manager for LSU last year, who did have a large play in building this roster, and now he's headed back to Ole Miss, from what we understand. So,
good. I mean, is Ole Miss starting to look like LSU's JV team?
Yeah, it is. It's kind of like, yeah, whatever, JV or flunkies, whatever how you want to look at it. That's pretty rough, huh? But
Austin did a good job getting that portal class together, but you never know about portal classes.
And we were just talking about with basketball. I think that's the key to what Matt McMahon has put together with all these transfers. They've got that chemistry. LSU didn't ever have that.
Right. And that's coaching. You know, that a lot of that is coaching because you got to be able to get them together really quick. But the portal is kind of a crapshoot, though, because you don't know how good they are. They had some great players, but you worry about the culture.
That's why getting Lane Kiffin was so important. He's the transfer portal king.
He is.
He's the NIL king. And I understand, you know, he was guaranteed $25 to $30 million that LSU was going to put towards that roster every year. I understand that's up to $40 million for this year.
Where did that come from?
Various sources.
Wow.
You know, we did already, you know, we heard that donations were up significantly the first week after Kiffin was hired, along with ticket sales, which were up 15,000 for season tickets, which is that's a huge number.
All right. Do you think LSU, you're going to get asked this too, Andre, do you think LSU makes the playoffs in 2026?
I think that they need to get a quarterback. They need to get some offensive linemen. They need to get
They're going to get a quarterback.
When I say a quarterback, I mean they're going to need, like Glenn said,
two quarterbacks. Well, Lane tends to get two.
Yeah, I know. But so this is what I'm telling you: if they get Lagway or Chambliss or Leavitt, you know, and another quarterback, and they have Van Buren, they get some offensive linemen, and they get a wide receiver, and they get probably Kewon Lacy. Then I think they're in the playoffs.
How about you, Andre?
I will say, ask me this after January 16th.
Loser. No. You're a loser.
No, because look.
No, that's the point.
Well, I'll say no with right now with the roster they have.
Well, then the roster's going to change. They just got $40 million.
That's what I'm saying.
But they really do have to rebuild the roster.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, they do.
In my opinion, they have to do addition by subtraction. So I don't think that we've seen the last of guys kind of being pushed out, in my opinion.
Let me tell you, if Lane Kiffin can take that Ole Miss team that was much better roster-wise last year than heading into this year and turn them into that, then he's got the resources and the ability to do much more than that at LSU. What's expected of him.
His first year at Ole Miss, though, they were not great. I'm thinking they'll be pretty good next year, but not playoffs. Thank you for joining us on Tiger Rag Radio. We'll see you next week.
Tiger Rag is everywhere. Online at TigerRag.com. Like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/TigerRag Magazine. Or follow us on Twitter at Tiger_Rag.